Hey there, it's Mike Tramp, and you're listening to White Line Fever, where rock and roll is still alive like it always has been and it always will be.
Okay, welcome to White Line Fever. My name is Steve Mascord, and our first guest is a guy you heard from last week. It's Keith Nelson from Buckcherry. Welcome back, Keith.
Good to be back, Steve. How you doing, buddy?
Pretty good. Now, I wanted to ask you about this sort of there's a few things I want to ask you about going back. I know we're talking about the new album, Rock and Roll, and we'll continue on that. But can you just tell the listeners about how Crazy Bitch changed your lives and changed the career of the band, what impact it had?
Well, the quality of woman that this band attracted shot up exponentially. I'll just say that. No, but seriously, you know, Crazy Bitch was a song that Josh and I had written before the first wave of the band really split up, you know. He and I were still working on what we thought was going to be our third record. We wrote that song, we demoed it up, and then just kind of sat around for a few years because we went on a bit of a hiatus. And then when we got the band back together, right before we went in to make the 15 record, I pulled the demo out and I go, let's just try this, see what happens. I don't know. People were saying, oh, the lyrics on that will never get played on the radio and it'll have to be censored. And we were like, yeah, let's just do it anyway. And we did it. And then miraculously, the radio stations all over the world started playing the song. We didn't even ask them to. A lot of people will know that when you release a single off of a record, you go and you get on your hands and knees and you beg radio stations to play it. But we didn't do that. We were going to go with a different single, and all these radio stations started playing that song. And the rest is kind of history. It just took off and hasn't stopped since.
And when you did the song Too Drunk to Fuck, was that kind of like trying to zero in on the same appeal, you know?
No, you know, Josh would always be telling stories about those crazy Southern California house parties that he used to get involved in when he was a young man. And, you know, it's just a fun song to do. I don't think that we were trying to follow in the footsteps of anything. We were just having some fun, and we all thought the song was hilarious.
Yeah, yeah. So have you ever actually gone into the studio and sort of tried to concoct a single? Or a novelty single, or has it always just been something that's been a byproduct and come later?
I mean, it's always come naturally. You know, there was a time after we made our first record, and we had a lot of success with the song called Lit Up. And the suits from the record label were calling me up and saying, you got to write another Lit Up. You have to write another Lit Up. And that really fucks with your head as a songwriter. It's like, you know, I was new to the game and I didn't really understand how it all worked. And so it was very frustrating. And after that, we just resigned to the fact that, you know what, we're just going to make the best record that we can. And if you feel like there's a single on it, great. And if you don't think there is one, we'll just keep writing songs. But I'm not going to chase my history. Fuck that.
Yeah, yeah. So there's less of that now because you've got your own record company, right? Or do you still have people who are kind of tapping you on the shoulder and giving you advice and stuff like that? Is that what, you're more independent?
What it comes down to is, yeah, there's none of that anymore. Josh and I are tapping each other on the shoulder. but, you know, we really share so much of the same idea of the way things should be that there isn't really a lot of drama around it. You know, we know what we like. We know what we want to hear. And there you have it.
Yeah, yeah. And tell us now, in the intervening break between the last album and this one, you put out a line of sex toys. What's the story there?
We're just trying to fill a void in the market.
I think you've used that line before.
Crazy Bitch has become its own standalone thing, you know. A lot of people know the song, don't even know the band. So somebody came to us with the idea, and it seemed like a good enough idea, and we went with it.
And do you sell stuff like that on your merch stand at shows?
We pretty much will sell it to anyone that wants to buy it.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's have another song, Keith.
Why don't you play "Bring It On Back" off the new record?
Up on that wheel, I'm rolling. Just give me an hour. Get up on that wheel, I'm rolling.
This is Keith from Brook Cherry, and you're listening to White Line Fever. Turn that shit up.
Okay, welcome back to White Line Fever. I think we're up to episode 83. I apologize for not doing one during the test series, but my computer died, and it's getting fixed at the moment, and you may never hear this. But anyway, we're in Leeds, and I'm with Phil and Tony from Scratching Shed, who've both been on individually before, but never together.
Is that correct?
That is true. We're not normally seen in the same place together. I think there's a law against it.
Yes, probably so, yes. But anyway, we're sat in the pub and we're drinking nice beer, nice Yorkshire beer.
We are, and we've also got the great, the legendary Chris Whitworth, who started Rugby League Internet Radio. How are you?
I'm good, thank you, and legendary sounds absolutely awesome. maybe I'll make an impact over the next 12 months. We'll see.
That's awesome. And then, can you just tell, because I think some of the listeners, thanks to you, you feature this program. I don't think many people know about how the hell do you set up a 24-hour rugby league station. I know this could go on forever. Give us a Reader's Digest version, but
it's basically a laptop, a PC, my phone, and a tablet. I've got all the microphones, mixers, and I bought some space on a server in the UK. And we've set it up, and it can run 24 hours a day, unlimited listeners, unlimited gigabytes. so I can put as much information on there, as many podcasts on there. So if you're interested and you want to do a podcast, please join in, because I do want to fill 24 hours a day.
Tell me, how did you, like, what's currently on there? Sorry, guys, I'm sorry. What's currently on there?
We've got Wild Line Fever, Super League Pod, Love Rugby League, doing the final hooter. I've got the guys from Devil Under Detail there on there. Ian Ramsdale does once when he can. I know he's a busy man, he's everywhere. So he brings some news from the south. I've got a few people from Australia as well, the good old Down Under. We've got the Shark Podcast, Screaming Eagles, they've come on. There's a couple more looking, maybe coming through next season.
Is that a new one, Screaming Eagles, is it?
They've been going about 18 months. Oh, yeah. I got them sort of mid-season. Mm-hmm. And some of the content they put out is good. It does need a bit of a warning before. but so do quite a lot of podcasts. I think it's just like being stood on the sidelines, really. You hear the language that you hear at rugby. So, yeah, we do have to put a bit of an explicit content warning on that one. And it's just growing. Hopefully, next year we've got a few more people interested. There will be a breakfast show coming on, and there is a drive time show, which I'll be doing myself, which will be live for 90 minutes.
That's awesome.
Ooh. That's awesome. So, okay, fellas, let's talk a bit about this test series. The New Zealand side was very under strength.
Yeah.
But a lot of positive publicity for England and for Steve McNamara. How much do you read into it? How much admiration do you have for this result?
I think the important thing is England won. That was the priority. Mm-hmm. That if New Zealand had won that series with six or seven top-line players not there, admittedly, England had two or three that they couldn't call on as well. Mm-hmm. Perhaps wouldn't have chosen them anyway, but that's another issue. The big 2 years are the ones coming up. Mm-hmm. The Four Nations next year and then into the World Cup. So I think England beating the first ranked nation just has put International Rugby League up a place or two. You said there was a lot of publicity. There was a lot of publicity around people like Sam Burgess. Mm-hmm. And if we've missed an opportunity, it's at the end of this series. We should immediately have announced the Four Nations details, the venues, tickets on sale, Sam likely to be back in England, possibly captaining the team. That's where Rugby League lets itself down. We've had a good series, we've had a couple of sell-out venues, we've had a decent series victory, and that's it now for Rugby League.
Wouldn't that be the fault of whoever does press releases for the RLEF?
I don't think that's an RLEF competition. I mean, that's where the jurisdiction becomes the RLIF. I think we're trying, aren't we? We're trying.
Tony, should Steve McNamara keep his job?
I think so now, yeah. I think it would be a bit ridiculous for him to go at this point. As Phil says, the big thing about the series was that England had to win it. They had to turn that idea of the English team being a bunch of losers around. We've been saying for years that they're getting closer and closer, and yet not had anything cast iron to prove for that. Do you know, I don't think most people in the general public care much for all the mitigating factors of who's not playing. You can only beat the team that's actually from here. And they did that, and they did it quite well, really, all told. It was a very defensive series. Obviously, we hear the much repeated stat that not a single back scored a try. But sometimes you've got to do that. And I also think that in international sport generally, not just in rugby league, very often it's not about the performance, it's about the result. The actual, so, I don't know, I suppose you might call it patriotism thing, matters more. The country actually wins is what people are most interested in. So to get back to your original question, yeah, I think Steve McNamara has delivered that victory. He had to do that. If he'd have lost, it would have been a different story, but he didn't lose, they won. And so, yeah, I'd basically leave him in situ for the next 2 years personally. Yeah.
And Chris, how nervous were you with the Kiwis attacking right up to the siren, really, in Wigan?
I'm always nervous when England play. But this year, I agree, the defence was awesome. And that's what, in the end, won the games. Steve McNamara, I think he's done a fantastic job. He's pulled some great players together. The experience he's probably gained working in Australia, he's brought that back with him, as well as the players that are playing over there as well. They've also got some inside knowledge, you know, when they're playing against people like Isaac Luke. You're playing at top level week in, week out. And I think we should have won three, basically. I think the second one, I don't know what happened, but I was hoping it was going to be 3-0. But 2-1 will do anybody, you know. And if you can just win by being boring, as everybody's saying, then lift the World Cup by being boring.
And people forget also that he's actually at the Roosters. I mean, the Roosters are not some no-mark club, are they? They're probably the most entertaining side in the NRL, which is saying something.
I think Canberra.
I'm not sure. I think Steve McNamara has saved his job.
Mm-hmm.
I think there was a feeling, particularly even around the second test, that the public was starting to turn against this non-style of rugby. Mm. It's effective, but there's still the feeling that if Australia bring a first choice team, New Zealand bring a first choice team, you've got to have more than what we've got at the moment, and that he is a little bit overly loyal to certain players. Mm. And he's very structured. You know, the hooker has to come off after 20 minutes no matter how well he's playing or what the shape of the game. All four substitutes have to be used by the 28th minute.
Mm.
Probably in a double substitution somewhere there. It is so fixated as if it was an NRL game that actually sometimes you lose what the essence of you're about. I mean, the big debate for me was, should he have picked Adam Cuthbertson? Because he was the standout player this year in taking the game forward by returning it back 30 years. But what he had was an offload game that is, you know, that's.
And should New Zealand have picked Benji Marshall? There's another one, yeah.
I probably haven't seen enough of Benji Marshall to comment on that. But I just think if they'd picked Cuthbertson, they would have had somebody on the bench who could have done something different. You would then maybe look at your halfback pairings and pick somebody who's a little bit more of a support player. I think England are innately conservative under Steve McNamara, and I'm not sure that's enough to win a World Cup.
You know, this is an interesting point, though, is that do representative coaches, particularly test coaches, owe us more than club coaches in explaining their selections? Because, you know, like Benji Marshall, and I'm a great admirer of Steve Kearney, and then intellectually you go, well, if you're a sporting coach and you're successful, then that's all that matters, okay? But Benji Marshall was on the second rung of voting in the Dally M's. He was available. He wanted to play. They had no halves. He didn't come. Equally, Adam Cuthbertson won the Rugby League Writers Association Player of the Year, was available for selection, and like Benji Marshall, was considered but wasn't picked for reasons which no one cares to share with us. And the big question is, do these guys owe us more accountability and transparency with their selections, or don't they? Do we only care if they win? And if they win, they don't need to tell us anything. I mean, what do you think?
I think the latter. I think if they're winning games, then they're winning games. But I think that what Steve Kearney is probably thinking about is not so much this series. I mean, he's obviously wanted to win the series, but if he's looking ahead. He's thinking that he wants New Zealand to win the World Cup. That's what he's thinking of, even my next year. So what he's actually done in this series is he's given a couple of young halfbacks at least some real experience of what it's like to play at this level. And whilst I think if Benji Marshall and Sean Johnson, for that matter, are fit, then you're going to have them in the front line, aren't you? But a strong side has to have a strong squad, and I think Stephen Kearney realises that. So I actually think the Kiwis will have gone back not too upset, really. I think they'll be looking forward and thinking, you know, it's mission accomplished in a lot of ways.
But as a journalist, I mean, I think it's your job to try to introduce some transparency into team selections, one of many little duties that you have. So, you know, I understand from Stephen's point of view, it's like, oh, if I'd won, no one would have asked me about Benji Marshall. And that's true. Yeah. But nevertheless, you know, like, and because England won, no one's saying, why didn't Adam Cuthbertson play? But when he was awarded that Rugby League Writers Award, he said, well, maybe the style of play, if you're at the dinner, he said, maybe I didn't suit the style of play, and that's the style of play that you described, Phil. You know?
I think the other thing that I find odd, and it goes a little bit back to maybe the crowd atmosphere at a couple of the games, that we bought into the fact that we all wanted England to win, but because the selection wasn't desperately exciting, and again, there weren't any changes in the team for the second test, it was very, very hard to get the crowd animated.
Mm-hmm.
But I just don't see the point of calling somebody like, say, Luke Gale into the squad and not using him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is the ideal year, as Tony was saying, about trying people out. If you're going to select someone, why don't we just have a look if they're any good or not?
Mm-hmm.
And that when you win the first test, that gives you licence in the second one to perhaps experiment.
Mm.
Now, Steve McNamara may say, no, I want to win in two games, so I'm going to pick my selection from last week and hope it improves. But I just don't see the point of picking a couple of exciting players. We waited till the third test for Jermaine McGilvery, and all the Kiwis wanted to talk about afterwards was how good was this bloke, and we kept him in Cotton Wool for too long.
That's a contradiction, isn't it? Because on one hand, if you're picking Luke Gale as a reward for his club form, then you pick Adam Cuthbertson. Or else you don't, you know, like you know, it's really interesting. And the other thing is, like, if you're a national coach, should you not have to deal with all personality types?
Yep.
You know, is your job really to create a culture, an off-field culture, or is it actually just to pick the best players and get the most out of them, you know?
I think there's one other thing you've got to be as a national coach, and I'm not sure England have quite got that yet, is I think you've got to be a proven winner.
Mm.
And I understand all this about getting people together and taking them down to St George's and bonding exercise, but the season over here is a quarter longer than it is in the Southern Hemisphere, so I'm not sure you need to do too many bonding exercises, fitness work. Yeah, you need to be at a certain level. I think at national level, it's about motivating, giving people reasons to win. Mm-hmm. And the people that can do that the best, even with the greatest respect to Steve McNamara, are coaches who have been winners. Mm-hmm. And we consistently overlook them in this country. He's a very, very good assistant coach.
Mm.
I just think that now we're at a level whereby, because the season is so long over here, you need people that can purely motivate. You don't need people that can put in too much structure.
Mm.
So you're looking at perhaps like a Brian McDermott, but he isn't going to be taken on by the RFL. He's the Brian Clough of rugby league, as he was the Football Association. A little bit like Tony Smith was when he arrived, full of ideas about how he's going to change rugby league from the inside, and wasn't supposedly allowed to do so. But you can look at people like Andy Farrell, who I suspect will be coming on the market soon. Sean Edwards has said he wouldn't be averse to coming back to rugby league. And possibly even Wayne Bennett in a consultancy capacity.
Has he got some inside information there?
No. That's what I do. If you seriously want to win the World Cup,
I think Phil's just annoyed because Ryan Hall didn't get a pass all series.
I think Ryan Hall was annoyed he didn't get a pass.
Yeah. I sort of admire Stephen Kearney with Benji Marshall thing, because what he's actually done is he's put the nation, the team, whatever you want to call it, above the individual. Which I think when you're doing an international side, when you're in charge of an international team, I think that's very important. I think everybody, no individual can be bigger than the country, and I think that's another message that he was laying down, really, to say to Benji, well, if you're going to play in this side, you're going to be part of the side. I'm sure.
Yeah, but don't we deserve to be told that Adam Cuthbertson wasn't picked because he's an Aussie, and Benji Marshall wasn't picked because he sulked when he lost the captaincy? Don't the fans, like, particularly when you're a national coach, all those volunteers who are working at the canteen every Saturday morning, but don't they deserve to know why players are being picked and not being picked? What do you think?
I think, yeah, they should. I mean, in other sports, coaches get scrutinised down to how many hours sleep they've had, what they're doing, where they've been. But we seem to not actually pinpoint them down. Going back to who could take over if Steve McNamara disappeared, I don't see any reason why people like Andy Farrell, Sean Edwards, who have just worked in the international scene, they're used to just working with players on the short term. If you brought them into the fold, and should one person just be involved? Should we just have Steve McNamara? Can't we have two or three different people?
Well, he has got a fairly big staff.
Yeah, but it's not brought. If you look at Sean Edwards and Andy Farrell, they just work with an international team. I know Andy Farrell's done club rugby union, but recently their job has just been, let's get an international team great. And why can't we do that?
I'm not talking about criticising a coach for not picking someone, just asking them.
I think that's all I'm saying.
Give us an answer. Tell us why. You know,
maybe not Mike Ford. We don't. But no, I think you're absolutely right. Just hit the nail added, Chris. I think that it's not so much that they need to be telling us, although it would be nice if they did. I agree. It's the onus is on journalists to actually find this stuff out and to take the time and the interest to actually dig a bit beneath the press releases.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that. I don't know. You don't want to bite your colleagues and all that, but I honestly think that in this game we're too timid when it comes to actually putting people on the spot in high places. We need to be asking those questions and digging around and getting to the facts. For the moment, I think we're just a bit too keen in this country. I wouldn't make the claim for Australia, but in this country we're too happy to just regurgitate press releases, and that's not journalism, frankly. What you need to be doing is getting beneath the surface, making people accountable and asking the awkward questions. We don't do that enough.
So Alex Simmons called us in the middle of this segment, and we thought we lost the entire interview, but we didn't. So he won't be on the program. Maybe next month. So thanks for joining us, guys. I've got a WLF podcast on Twitter, wildlandfever.ning.com that's the website. And also donate, hit wildlandfever.ning.com and hit the donate button. And don't hit the Amazon button because they cancelled my account, so I won't get anything. I've got to change that link. Okay, guys, thank you very much. The end of the season. So, we'll go around the table. Your hopes for 2016 for rugby league.
My only hope is that there is a shorter season in the Northern Hemisphere and an international window put in its place.
Good luck with that. I don't think that's going to happen.
It's nearly Christmas.
I think my hope. Well, we need to follow up this new era, which hasn't gone too badly, but it's not quite lived up to its expectations. So, we want to build on that and really deliver. But the big thing is a successful Four Nations at the end of it. That's huge.
Chris. Yes, I agree. Successful Four Nations. More publicity for all leagues.
Successful Four Nations for Scotland, or
yeah.
How can we ever say that? That's not going to happen, is it, really? Unless suddenly they find 13 players that have got the grandma that have once visited Edinburgh.
McDonald's once went.
Yeah, McDonald's in Edinburgh. But also, yeah, just success for all the leagues, really. We have to look at the Championship and League One as well, which is something I'm going to be doing next year.
Okay, welcome back to the program, and it is the third and final part of our interview with Marcus from Helloween. Marcus, one of the songs on the on the new album, My God-Given Right, is Stay Crazy. I just wondered if touring is very different now than it was in the mid-'80s, you guys, are you a bit more disciplined now, or do you still kind of like to have a bit of fun?
Well, touring is like, well, we were younger and a little wilder, of course. You know, you could take more shit that's been around and that's been offered, you know, and the next day you shake your head and you're back on the track again. That changed a lot. I need 2 days to recover today. That changed a little, but you know, I'm still having fun. I'm still hanging out with people, drinking a couple of beer and just schnapps here and there, and it's just like not as often anymore and not as intense anymore, you know, because your body, of course, tells you not to do it too often and too heavy, you know, but apart from that, it's actually kind of the same thing going on, you know. Mm. I mean, in the 80s, there was like when hard rock and heavy metal was very, very, like, popular, even in the radio, even on the air. It that was, of course, different, but the tour, because everybody, so much more people were, like, getting you into radio stations and all that, but in Europe, almost no radio station plays metal anymore, you know. That's very, very different. But hanging out at shows, doing the show, especially the show itself, it stays the same. It's like the same from what it was like 30 years ago. The emotion, that very moment on stage, bringing something across, some emotions, you know, that's pretty much the same, and I like that.
Mm-hmm. You're not on Sony anymore. You're on Nuclear Blast. Does that speak to any wider issue as far as Sony losing interest in heavy metal? Is it just?
It was more like the working with Sony was great. It was not a matter of they did a bad job or something. It's just it was all okay. We were coming along very well. So it was just a matter of the contract ran out, and we were free to either do another contract with Sony or just do something very different, you know. And as the guys from Nuclear Blast were hanging around Halloween all the time, asking what you're going to do next, and showing interest all the time, we were like, all right, this contract is over, and why not going back home, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Although there was no bad words with Sony, it was just like the contract was running out, and we're thinking, all right, let's try this again. I mean, and now we have the feeling it was the best move we could make, you know, feeling like coming home again.
Yeah. There's been some reports that you're going to do a book for the 30th anniversary. Can you tell us anything about that?
It was like, hey, Vosey, let's have a beer.
Sorry, is it true you're going to do a book for your 30th anniversary?
We have tons of materials, pictures, and all that kind of stories behind it, and all that. It's like a fan book for like real collectors, I would say. You know, it's not like a history thing of with all that stories behind it. It's just more like full of collectors' items and pictures and all that. You know.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a little hello and the collection of things we were putting together and writing some stuff about it, and, you know, that kind of big book, anniversary book that's going to be coming out in autumn something.
Awesome. It won't be available on your Australian tour, or you'll be selling it at the merch table, or?
I don't know yet. We were busy with writing.
All right. Okay, I just want to ask you one more thing, Marcus. In 1985 or 86...
Merch store, or maybe it's in the shop.
Are you there?
I don't have any idea.
Yeah, I was going to say, in 1985, your music seemed quite extreme, you know. It was it was very different to other stuff that was around. What do you think of the direction? Now it sounds, I suppose, it sounds almost classic rock now, doesn't it? I mean, What do you make of the direction that heavy metal has taken in that time? Now you've got the sort of growly vocals and the, you know, really, really, I mean, you know, what are you into sort of some of that more extreme metal?
Well, sometimes I like a good Slayer tune, of course. It helps a lot to go to this kind of music when you feel like it, you know, but then there's a lot of it. And I only pick some what I like. Soilwork, Figure Number 5, of course, is what, you know, one of my favorite albums, you know, which is a nice cross between like classical heavy metal with keyboards, twin solos, very smooth harmonies, on vocals sometimes, but then they growl around and do that very, very rough kind of heavy metal and all that, you know. That is a kind of mixture I kind of like, you know.
Yeah.
But it's got to be, like, done very, very nice and clever, so it's touching me, you know.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of stuff sounding the same, of course, and if you listen to that, some stuff you think, oh, that sounds like this, and that, you know, it's always like the originality about it, you know, like that Soilwork Figure Number 5, I guess, is one of the greatest albums in that manner.
We are out of time. Thanks for joining us. Just one more song would be wonderful. Thanks.
All right. Oh, you want me to pick one?
Yes, please.
Wait a minute. Did you do some? Yeah, what we're gonna have? Play some Swing of the Fallen World. Why not? I like that one.
Okay.
A bit of dark stuff.
Fire!
this is Marcus, the bass beater from Halloween, and you're listening to White Line Fever, and stay tuned. I like it.
Okay, welcome back to the program, and we've got every single member of the Angels now. It's like collecting footy cards. I've got Sam Bruce here. Sam, what's the last week or so been like for you?
Yeah, pretty incredible. I've never been to Europe or the UK before. Is it UK and Europe, or are they all in Europe?
UK is part of Europe, but people still say that.
Yeah. So yeah, it's pretty exciting. Yeah. Especially London, we got a few days to walk around London, and yeah, see, you know, all the iconic things like the Tower Bridge and the Tower of London and all that, and Soho. Mm. So yeah, it's been great.
Now, a lot of blokes your age, they'd be excited to go overseas on a tour, a rock and roll tour with all their expenses paid, but then, oh, Dad's coming. Has that been a bit of a downer?
No, he's been pretty well behaved, mostly. But, yeah, no, he's all right.
Does the band, when you're on, do you split into, like, you know, you and Nick and Dave sort of sneak out after curfew and play up? Is that the way it works? Or?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Yeah, when he goes to bed, or, like, you know, or we decide we're going to, in London, take a really long walk, so he, you know, sort of drops off halfway. And yeah.
Mate, what's it like to... Have you been checking out the faces of the audiences? Because that's, I'd imagine, one of the great pleasures of doing something like this.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. They've been fantastic. I mean, especially... both the London gig and Paris. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's pretty incredible. In Paris, they were actually singing along with Rick's guitar parts.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And, mate, what happens when you go home and it's just back to normal life? Is it going to be a bit hard to adjust to?
Well, I've got another 3 weeks here, actually.
All right.
I'm having a holiday here with my partner, Lara. So I've got 3 weeks, and then I'm actually moving house when I get home, so I've got that to look forward to.
That'll bring you back to it. How do you feel about maybe the band coming over here more often? Is that a good thing? Or?
Oh, I'd love for that to happen. There's been talk of it, especially with the promoter in France. So, yeah, hopefully we can organise that. There's some talk of Hellfest, and then booking a tour around that, so, yeah.
Well, Sam, I've never actually interviewed you before. I've had a couple of beers, but I've never interviewed you before, so go and enjoy the rest of the night. Sneak out again. Tonight's a good night to sneak out.
Yeah. Well, actually, yeah. I mean, the darkness are on about midnight. I don't know if they'll be able to top the sugar last night. I mean, that was unbelievable.
You know what? I'm not doing any of this, so give us a song of someone you've seen here at the festival that you think people should hear.
Bleed by Meshuggah.
Okay.
If you like heavy metal.
Well, if you don't like heavy metal, you're not listening to the program.
I know it. I've got a white line fever. Going to run land down under. Going to turn around the corner way down yonder. And I'm not even going to try to rhyme anymore. Michael Monroe here for White Line Fever. And Dig, you get a chance, come and check us out live. We're going to rock your socks off and whatever. Rock like fuck. That's what I say. Okay, come on down and rock on.